Hey everyone, this is Stelly FD.
And Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about common problems that early stage startups face.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best. Yeah, I mean, in some ways you could say every problem, right? They need to start a company. There's simple things like legal and incorporation and finding co-founders if you don't have one. And then, you know, obviously the most important thing is just what are we doing? What business are we in, right? And all that stuff. So I'll start with kicking one off, which is related to some things that we've talked about before in previous episodes. But it's like basically one of the most common mistakes is they don't spend the time to make sure that either the people you're starting the company with, the co-founders, even the early team, if you have one, are aligned on values. So, you know, one thing I see them do is they don't really get aligned on values. It might mean you're not writing them down. Like, that's okay if that's not how you feel about it. But there's values that are occurring. There's culture that's happening. And just being deliberate about it, whatever way it is, right? Sometimes some companies, if they're like really product people, they might just write down some product principles because at least you have shared values around that. And early on in a company, usually product and building something, anything, or learning what the problem is really important.
With that being said, I think that one of the most common problems that I see startups have is that they don't, and I love there's a quote, so I'll use those words. We had an episode about words previously. They don't violently execute a mediocre plan today. They're trying to get to the perfect plan tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts.
Why do you think they do that?
I think it's just fear.
Fear of what?
Fear of failure, fear of uncovering what's wrong, what's bad. I think also comfort zone. Like, it's much more comfortable for the two of us to brainstorm about how we're going to take over the world than to attempt to really do it. And if we don't feel like we have all the answers, it's even more uncomfortable because now the chance of failure is so much bigger in our head. But if we think, if we just had a few more days to plan this, we'll plan it perfectly, which means that when we have to snap into action, we're going to succeed. I think that's the fallacy that people follow, is like they're trying to hack their way around failure by planning their way to perfection in their own mind. It's just a comfortable thing to – it's a fun thing to do. I love brainstorming new ideas and coming up with names for companies and doing all that easy work that's like – that's beautiful, comfy –
it's not execution.
It's not the brutal, dirty, messy work of execution. I like the idea of daydreaming being on top of Mount Everest, but I don't want to do the grindy, dirty, cold, hard work of getting up there. And I think that's really what it boils down to. I think people love that idea. That's one thing. And the other thing is that most people don't have experience in, like, just execution. In most people's careers, doesn't matter if it's like academically, what have we learned in school? But then also for most people that go into like a corporate career, you don't learn that there. You learn the planning and the meetings and the meetings for meetings and more meetings and the more planning.
Usually it's someone else's plan.
It's somebody else.
You didn't do the planning.
Yeah, and they learn the politicking and how to come up with really a nicer way of presenting this idea and how to make you also learn to be very tactical on making sure you don't make public mistakes.
Make sure you look good.
You need to look good.
And the startup's the exact opposite.
The exact opposite.
Looking good doesn't help you.
It doesn't. It's usually counterproductive.
Right.
So I think that just people are not used to that mode. They've had a corporate career. They've learned the whole way to operate within a certain framework. Yep. And then when they switch to a startup, they still use the same framework. And it's tough for them to switch.
Okay, so that's one demographic. Another is people who have never worked in a company and just start a company. And that's the first thing they do because that's becoming a more and more common thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you did that, but I think you did as well, right? You just started a company. Yeah, same here. I just started a company. I didn't know how to work for anyone.
Yeah.
And many of us don't have the skills that are actually valuable that you get from working in an environment because working with people and motivating people isn't easy. And if you haven't seen a good version of that, then you're making it up, right? And, and if you don't have a natural inclination towards motivating and leadership and things like that, then you got to learn it, right, if you're in that role. So I think the mistake they make is they don't realize they're leaders. They don't realize that their behavior, their words, their persona impacts the company. Like what I like to say about it is like there's a little bit of the founders in everybody. Like just a little bit of the way they think. Otherwise, usually the people wouldn't be on the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the another metaphor of this is the kind of the founders are birthing that, you know, the core DNA of the company. Yeah. And then everybody you add is influencing that, right. You know, baby as it grows up and have an impact on it. But yeah, obviously the people that are attracted to you and the thing you're passionate about will have
something common. Always.
There's something
even
common there.
They're like different than you, right? And that's the culture. And it's almost like you have to recognize that like these people are here, you know, partially and usually like primarily because of the people who are in the company already.
Yeah.
Right. And that realization, like if you're too late on that, then you start having people leave and stuff because you don't realize the things you're saying and your own evolution and what you need to do to keep up with your company. I call it keeping up with your company because, you know, there's more of them than you. If you want to look at it like that, right?
I like that. Keeping up with your company. There's more of them than you. I love that. So, all right. So let's riffing on that. I think for the people, for the founders that do realize that they are leaders.
Yeah.
I think one of the most common mistakes and a mistake that I've done for the longest period of time is that you think that in order to be a good leader, you need to pretend you're a perfect human being or you need to pretend – you need to keep a public appearance about you, even to your team, in ways that are not authentic to who you truly are. Now, the example to this is, for instance, being the first in the office and the last that leaves.
Yep.
This is something that I don't think that that's a bad idea necessarily.
No, yeah. A lot of people preach it.
I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think when you start having anxiety about that type of thing and you like trip over yourself to just rush into the office to be the first, it oftentimes causes for the rest of the day you're not doing anything. You made the public appearance of being there first, or when you stay the latest, you're like you're exhausted, you're burned out, but then you'll just sit there and look at your stupid screen for another hour to have everybody leave. This is a massive waste of human energy and potential. I feel that other humans will pick up on it.
Absolutely.
So I think that then it becomes very counterproductive.
Yeah.
So there's a fine balance between leading people and going first with whatever you expect them to do and between also being human and showing strength through vulnerability versus trying to pretend strength through the lack of vulnerability and weaknesses. Like you're trying to be this perfect human being and by that you're not yourself, you're not authentic, and people start mistrusting everything you say because right. They know they can't believe everything you say.
Right.
Because you're trying to keep up a persona versus there's something magical in people trusting each other. Maybe that's going to go to another problem.
Well, and being themselves.
Being yourself with all the good and the bad, even if you have many, many things that are wrong about you, if you're very authentic, people will at least respect you and know where you stand on things. If that's lacking and you're trying to lead people, they don't respect you and they don't know where you stand on things,
no.
You're fucked.
That's right.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
Right? It's horrible. So let's talk about the trust one because I think that's a big big early stage startup problem.
They don't trust each other?
They don't trust each other. Yeah.
How do you recognize that? How do you even figure that out?
So the way that I think you can recognize that is like one indicator of that is when everybody needs to be involved in certain things. Like fundraising is a good example. Oh, there's three co-founders and the three co-founders are together fundraising, going into every meeting, every call, everything. To me, that means that there's distrust because it's not productive to have three people sit in that meeting.
Maybe they don't know any better.
Many of them will not know any better. And I'm not sure if we made an episode about that, but that's a big like fundraising sin in my book is like collective fundraising is just a huge waste. But that's one indicator. But anything, basically, any type of activity that seems important, if like fundraising can be one thing, talking to the press can be another thing, going to any type of like flashy and important, anything that seems important, setting up, having a relationship with your lawyers. In those situations, if the founders, for instance, feel the need to always
be
in everything together, to me, it's an indicator of mistrust.
So take a step back, right? And go figure out how to get alignment, right?
Yeah. ask yourself, yeah, why are we doing this? Why do I'm the CTO or I'm the technical guy. Why am I in all legal meetings? Because I don't trust. Because I'm afraid if I'm disconnected from that, that
it could be a bad decision made.
Either a bad decision made or later on I could get a vulnerability. Maybe in some contract they sneak something in that's bad for me that I'm not aware of. Maybe our lawyers like my co-founder more and they'll help them with something. Yeah, Eden is rolling his eyes. But I do think people have these anxieties.
Anxieties.
So in order to protect themselves, they try to be involved in everything, which is to me a strong indicator that there's not trust.
That's right.
There's trust lacking and missing here. You need to be vulnerable in any healthy relationship with any number of other people. You need to have vulnerability.
Yeah.
If you try to protect yourself from that, it's not a healthy relationship because the energy and time you need to invest in trying to protect yourself from all virtual scenarios you can come up with in your mind,
it's
such a waste. It's
counterproductive.
It's poison for the relationship. The other person feels it, can sense it.
Whether you know it or not,
And it will then affect their behavior towards you. So it's the beginning of the end typically, right? Okay. Other common early stage startup mistakes.
We talked a lot about like people and team ones.
Yeah.
I think one that I see a lot is like my founder friend David Cancel said this, and he has a whole blog post on it, so I won't go deep, but like he was basically saying that you should assume you're wrong about all things basically. Right. And if you go in with that assumption, then you're not assuming you're right. So then you're going to try to figure out how to prove what you're doing wrong. Right. So I see a lot of companies like I used to call it, they smoke their own crack. Right. So they're just like, oh, yeah. Everything's good. Everything's great. Yeah. We got our product and our customers love us. I'm like, wait. How many customers? 10. OK. What's your product? Oh, it's like this MVP we did. I'm like, are you sure? Like, I think you need more customers. Right.
Yeah.
And then you tell me they love you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I think there's a false belief there, a false belief that they're making progress or you know, they're being successful when they're actually not. Right. And so being able to figure out what your goals are and what you really need to do in the short term is really important in a startup. And I think that when companies get kind of lose sight of that, that's when you start seeing even early stage startups break down.
I love that. That was the my favorite thing that I've learned from Heaton before we ever met in person.
Yeah.
Was watching your MicroConf talk from the year prior to last year, so that was 2013 probably, where you talked about validation and you said, you know, most founders are way too positive, way too optimistic. So if you try to go out there in the world and prove yourself right, you're probably going to be too easy on yourself in finding evidence that you're right.
Yeah.
What you should be doing instead is try to go out there and prove your hypothesis wrong.
Yeah, and that's a very core customer development, like sort of tenet, if you want to call it that. I'm rolling my eyes on that just because like a lot of people shun like a lot of these concepts, right? And there's a lot of good parts of them. Right. And obviously some parts you might disagree with, but like that's one that's gold, right?
Yes. I when I first heard that, I'd never heard that part before or never paid attention to it maybe.
Yeah.
But when I heard it, I was like, oh, my God, it makes such
that's why you do it.
Huge sense.
Yeah.
Right. And it counteracts like a big mistake, which is the, as we said before, the founders going and saying, oh, everybody loves us. Or I've talked to many people and they all give me positive feedback. It's
hubris, right? That like I'm unstoppable. Everything's good. That's what comes out when you start believing that, right? And it's just dangerous. It's more like, yeah, this is what we got. You know, here's how it's going. And there's more to learn. Like even when people ask me, oh, you guys are doing great, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, so much more to do. I'm only saying that for myself.
All right. So this points to another mistake. This is not just early stage startups. This is a founder problem,
yeah.
I find. And I had this conversation just a few days ago with a founder friend of mine where, and this sounds so broad, but the problem is trying to be somebody you're not. So the scenario was that he is currently fundraising again for his company and he very much believes in what he does, but he still has doubts because a bunch of things are not going well. And then he brings up these examples of other founders he knows that are a lot more delusional than he is, or visionary, depends on how history is going to play out. And he's bringing them up in admiration, saying, this dude, where everything is going wrong, he goes into these investor meetings and he's so in self-belief and he's so like – he's so confident that he just makes everybody love him.
I want that.
Or better – I need to be more like that. But this is something. This is something I could. This is something that this particular founder has been thinking and saying for a long time, even in prior fundraising rounds where he always had a little bit of trouble. Not just him. I thought that I should be more like this. I always compared myself with Steve Jobs and thinking, why am I not more buying into my own bullshit?
Yeah. That's what you think those people were doing.
Yes.
Right? You don't even know what they're doing. Like, they're just a certain way on the outside, and you're like, oh, yes, I want that. I'm like, okay, you want success. Got it. Or whatever you perceive it to be.
But – and I was telling him – I gave him a counterexample saying, all right, so this is one way of getting to your goal. But let's look at this other guy. I know this founder that went into investor meetings, and all he did was basically like – everything is going wrong. Here's some numbers that are going right and some things that are going really well and some things that are great. But here are my 10 most pressing issues. How would you as an investor solve these or help me solve these? How do you think about these problems? Because if you don't think about them in a way that's different from me, then why are we even talking? Why are we even talking?
They're probably like, what?
Like, and they're like, holy shit. Right.
They're paying attention then.
They're like, holy shit, now I need to be really good. And with this guy, it was actually also authentic, right? He's just hypercritical.
Being real. Yeah.
He's confident, but he's not delusional in saying there's no problems, everything is perfect. Yeah. And when I brought that example, I could see my friend's eyes go, oh shit, yeah.
I can do that too.
I can do that.
Yeah. No, but I get it.
You know, but it made me realize, holy shit, so many of us try to be like somebody. We're just not.
Behavior. Yeah. That's killer.
Just don't be somebody else because you're never going to be able to be
that way. You have your own story. You have your own context. You have your own everything. Even if you just got out of college, you have a story. Yeah. You started this company some way.
Yeah.
I asked them, wait, hold on, just tell me your story. Right. And then it's very clear to see when someone isn't congruent and they don't understand that their story is what got them here. Everyone's like that. Right. And if you can tell that story, that's what you should be doing. Right. Not thinking about how someone else told their story. Right. And also like just on this one, like with the investors and all that and trying to frame your story, like I think people don't understand that. We're in a world today where these investors are seeing lots and lots of things, lots and lots of decks, more than ever. So if you can't make that stand out, you're done, right? And I think that's a big mistake startups make, which is like one of my pet peeves that's like indicative of this. They put the word product on the product slide. They put the word problem on the problem slide. They put the word market size on the market size slide. It's like, guys, no. Like, what are you doing? Like, stop. Like, tell your story, right? And you know what's funny? On this one, just to harp on it for a second, most people that give the people that I'm giving advice on their decks give the exact opposite advice that I give. I tell them to tell their story. And if there's something really good in it, I make sure it's in there, emotional, whatever. And I say, this is your story. This is why you're here today, right? And that's what people want to hear. Everyone else is telling them, oh, there's this formula. You need this slide. You need this go-to-market thing. And you need this. And I'm like, that's not going to work. Nobody's going to understand your story if you talk about that, unless you're really good at speaking. Most people aren't.
And the beautiful thing here is that there's examples for what you explained. There's examples for the people having slides that say problem and solution and still it works out.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the end of the day, it doesn't fucking matter.
That's right.
But you need to find something you are exceptionally great at and that feels right.
Yeah, and everyone sees it. And then even the slides don't matter. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah, but a lot of times people need help with the slides on that, right, to tell their story, which is fine.
So let me throw one more in here before we end with tips. Another common problem I see early startups make and face is that they're not as brutally self-deterministic as they need to be if you want to be an entrepreneur, which means they rely too heavily on other people or what other people promise them in one way or another. It doesn't matter if it's, oh, this investor told us they're going to give us money or they're going to fund our next round. Or if it is, well, this development shop told me they're going to finish the work by this deadline before we need to go public on this stage. Or whatever the hell it is. Oh, this vendor in China told us yes to this. Whatever the fuck it is, it's basically they rely on somebody else and they don't own up 100% responsibility to make sure that whatever somebody promised them will be delivered without a doubt. They just go, oh, this person told me they're going to do it. And what did you do? I waited for this person to do it. Yes, Heaton's face is like cringing in pain when he heard that. That is just, it's a very naive mistake, but I still see it. So many founders, so many early stage startups are getting into trouble. I'm probably just saying this because I talked to somebody the other day that relied on some other firm that made them some partner, that made them some promise, and they relied on that. And now kind of everything is collapsing based on this problem, and they're in panic. And I'm like, why the fuck would you ever – why would I ever put my company in somebody else's hands and lean back and expect them to deliver?
Yeah.
Like, why would I ever do that?
Make sure they're doing that.
You have to. You have to. And you can't just take somebody's word for it. Oh, they said they're going to do that by next. So, okay, what did you do to make sure they do it? What did you make to make sure they're on track of doing it? Like, you need to manage that promise. Like, you need to manage that promise. You can't just take that promise and relax on it. And then when it doesn't happen, you blame somebody else for your – for the.
Oh, they didn't do that. Well, did you make them do that?
Yeah.
They say they were going to do it? Yeah, they did. Well – then they should have done it, and it's on you.
Yeah. Like, how did you – did you check in on them? Did they sign a contract? Did, like, what kind of reassurances? Did you get background checks? Have you talked to other people that got that promise from them? How – what made you think you can just relax and wait and it's going to happen for you? That's too